information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. It's Friday morning, and this is the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, April 28th. He goes into his show notes and turns the 7 into an 8. April 28th. We have our full slate of Friday guests. So we had Kia Vakil earlier. We have Mark Jacob coming up in a half hour with media coverage of President Biden's reelection announcement. We have Dan Schumacher, who's going to break down the Bucks' epic playoff meltdown. And we're giving away tickets to tonight's Milwaukee Brewers game, which I thought this question would be a little easier. I know as somebody who worked in one of these breweries for a time when I lived in Milwaukee, one that loved to talk about being the first in town. So between Miller, Schlitz, Pabst, and Blatt's, which landmark Milwaukee brewer set up shop first in 1844? 844-967-2789. First one through with the correct answer gets two club-level awesome seats to the Brewers game tonight against the Anaheim Angels. All right, now that we've talked about what's coming up later, let's talk about what's coming up now. It's Kristen Lyerly with Hometown Health.
Good morning. Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. And, you know, if you've got a free night, it would be a perfect night to go watch a Brewer game.
Well, and then here's the thing. We have to make an executive decision at 7:59. Do we just push these tickets over to Todd Alba and let him give them away on his show? Or, you know, do we just put them in our pocket and have another good night over at the ballpark? We're not afraid to do it, kids. I mean, I can't do it, but somebody here probably could. So hopefully somebody will come in and win those. Kristen, thanks for your patience so that we could. Well, we had Tammy Baldwin on yesterday in our usual Hometown Health segment. We did talk to you, though. You were in Minnesota at a bill signing, which was, just 24 hours ago, we were talking to you about that. Now you're back in the Green Bay area and getting set to talk about the farm to school program with Beth Heller from Wello. Tell us more about that and as you bring on Beth.
Well, Beth is my amazing colleague from Wello, as you mentioned, and she's been doing some really groundbreaking work in the Green Bay area and across Wisconsin to help get food to students, help students understand the supply chain, where their food comes from. So this isn't just about eating, it's about learning. Beth, welcome to Hometown Health this morning.
Well, hi, everyone. Hi, Kristen. Thanks for having me.
Hey, let's start first for the non-Green Bayans out there and tell us about Wello.
Yeah, sure. So Wello is a Green Bay nonprofit that works to build community conditions that help people thrive. We work to measure well-being at a community level. And then we really work with a range of partners to develop community-led change to address places where we might not be thriving. So we look at physical health, we look at physical well-being, mental well-being, social connectedness and relationship well-being, and then how does our environment, our built environment, help make us all well? So it's the dream job. What can I say?
And you said community, which is really what it's all about. And it's what the segment is about. It's about how do we build community through health in many different ways. And one thing that you've done with Wello is this farm to school program. So let's start with the basics. What does farm to school really mean? And where do we see this program in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so one of the real cool things that people might not know is that Brown County is really a hotbed of farm to school leadership. You know, it's one of those things where, we've been doing this for, since Wello really began. We started the work in Brown County with some large scale grants back during the Obama administration. There was this real focus on growing food and building community capacity around food, and then also helping people learn more about not so much the nutrition pyramid, but how to just be healthy with food and thrive in those ways. So we started a while back with some big grants that allowed us to work with a four-part evidence-based model. It sounds super nerdy, but it's this evidence-based model from public health that shows that when we start to teach kids about where their food comes from, so if we do some classroom lessons, if we have school gardens, if we really focus with food service on food purchasing, and then we focus on sustainability. These kind of four prongs of farm to school really can drive changes in what kids are eating and then also improve community conditions. So when we start to focus schools on buying local food, everybody thrives. We're supporting farmers. And we've just had this really, over the decade that we have been doing this, we've seen all 9 school districts in Brown County connect with Wello's Farm to School Task Force. We've built a real professional learning environment that has just kind of snowballed over the years. And so those four prongs of farm to school are happening in our districts. And then we're also now starting to focus on local food purchasing even more. That's really something that has taken off during the pandemic.
All right. We're talking to Beth Heller from Wello and Kristen Lyerly as part of Hometown Health. And we're going to talk more about it right after we take this break and also get an update on the weather from meteorologist Jennifer Oshitsky from Weatherology. And then this reminder that Up North News puts out a daily newsletter. We'd love to have you sign up. We are somewhere north of 90,000 subscribers and looking to reach that six-figure level. So go sign up at upnorthnewswi.com is the web address, and you'll find newsletter in the top banner. Click on that. Get yourself signed up for what Christina Lurie puts together for us. She will join us next week on Tuesday with her usual feature, The Uplift, about some of the uplifting stories that she likes to write for the newsletter. So, weather and hometown health all continuing right after this break on Up North News Radio for this Friday. More about the Farm to School program coming up in just a bit. A reminder, 2 tickets to tonight's Brewers game to the person who can tell us which first landmark Milwaukee Brewers set up shop in 1844 in Milwaukee. The Brewers open up a 3-game series against the Anaheim Angels. Wade Miley will take the mound for the Brewers. The Packers drafted Iowa pass rusher Lucas Van Ness in the first round of the NFL draft, and that will continue for the weekend. It feels like it's going to go on for the foreseeable future. These drafts, they used to be such basic things. Now they are these Hollywood scripted production numbers. And so does it end Sunday? Does it end? I don't even know what it ends. It goes on forever. So we're going to find out what the weather forecast is going to be like, whether you're watching the draft or trying to head outside, with Jennifer Vachitsky from Weatherology. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Tell us about this weekend where we've got, we've got sunshine in Madison. We just had rain moving out of our area. Tell us what we're facing around Wisconsin for the weekend.
Yeah, well, it does look like cloudy skies for most of the day. Some areas of sunshine around Oshkosh over to Green Bay for today. Chance for showers and thunderstorms starting in the west central Wisconsin during the day as the cold front begins to push through the state at that point. A little bit cooler there today as well, highs in the mid to upper 50s as they should be in the mid 60s. Chance for some showers coming into the central parts of the state late tonight and then dry through this to the south through the evening. Highs either at or slightly above average for the rest of the state. Again, right around between the lower 60s to mid 60s. To start the weekend Saturday, chance for showers and thunderstorms across the board and cooler for everyone as well as that cold front actually pushes through. Some locations looking to drop 10 or more degrees even, and everyone is expected to be below average. Mid to low 50s from Richland Center down to Madison and over to the lakefront. Mid to upper 40s around Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau and over to Amory and Baldwin. It looks like the central parts of the state over to Oshkosh potentially looking at a chance for a rain and snow mix overnight Saturday night into Sunday morning before becoming all rain. Also potential overnight and Sunday morning mix from Waukesha over to Madison as well. It does look like a rain snow mix for nearly everyone on Sunday morning. Nothing really expecting to see too much from that, but it is expecting to become all rain, and that's actually going to be our coolest day for this forecast for this weekend, actually, for everyone lingering in the 40s again, as everyone should be in the mid to lower 60s.
There we go. That's just the kind of gradual warm up that we're looking for. Well, we don't need 90 again. We just need to get out of the 30s and 40s. Jennifer, thank you so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Kristen Lyerly is with us. Well, also Beth Heller from Wello is back with us as well. Perfectly timed. When we take these commercial breaks and we say, well, you know, just be back in 4 minutes. And some people, Kristen, usually it's like 3 minutes and 55 seconds. She'll slide in. Beth thought, hold my beer, and is ready to join us again here. So Beth, Kristen, you were resuming. Oh, actually, Kristen, you're muted. So then you can.
It got very chaotic there for a second.
It got real Friday, real fast in here.
Jennifer said that we were below average, and it made me feel a little sad. And then, as it turns out, we are below average.
By the way, I just got this.
This
email from Beth at Wello. Internet went down. I have no signal. Okay, well, whatever that was. Remember the old line was somebody's got a case of the Mondays? Well, we got ourselves a case of the Fridays here. But all right, Kristen, put the train back on the track here.
Well, as we were going into break, we were talking about all of these different aspects of farm to school. And I just couldn't help but to think, this is food. I mean, food for me just seems so simple. I just buy it and put it in my mouth. But it's complicated. There's a lot behind the food that we eat. And Beth was telling us over the break about some of the cool stuff that's happened in the schools. Tell us about what has happened in Ashwaubenon, what you had seen in the past with Farm to School.
Yeah, so as I was talking about that four-part evidence-based model, one of the prongs is classroom lessons. And it's been very exciting to see how the whole school gets involved. And so Ashwaubenon actually had the lunch serving staff and the lunchroom staff go into the classrooms and teach farm to school lessons, which ultimately made this amazing vibe. So the kids would go in, they would have the lessons with the cafeteria staff. And then when they would go through the food line, they already talked about where the lettuce came from, where the cherry tomatoes came from, where the cucumbers came from. And the idea of just taking that polite bite and trying everything and really knowing where those vegetables came from, it created a real nice behavior change.
See, and I like that because when you involve the cafeteria workers, you know, the lunch ladies, you put more of a human face on them. They're not like, you know, they're servants who just, you know, scoop some food onto a tray or make the food for you. They are part of the entire educational process under that roof.
That's actually one of the things we're working on with some of the healthy school meals for all. We're really this push to get universal school meals, to get more, to then there's more money that schools can spend to buy local produce so that the kids get more healthy food on their plate, and hopefully raise the standard of the way we think about and, you know, compensate the people that are actually making the food for our children. That's just such an important part of all of this, you know, how we approach the way that we feed our kids, from valuing the people who are making those meals to the quality of food we put on the tray.
And recognizing that it's all connected.
It is all connected. Absolutely.
All right. Somebody's got to be the guy that makes everything about politics. That's apparently on my business card, but it applies in many instances. And this is one of them where you have to advocate in order to make sure that programs like this are a success. And we do have this mindset among some folks that everything should kind of be as a pay as you go thing. And, you know, everything should carry its own weight. So can you make the fiscal or political case for why a program like this is essential for our schools as well as for our growers and producers?
Well, first of all, it's just a fundamental right that that people have access to good quality food. And the kids in our state, in our country, many of them get most of their food calories at school. It's a sad truth. So it's an obligation, really, to ensure that we have healthy, nutritious food for kids. There is a lot of work going on locally and nationally. As I mentioned earlier, the Healthy School Meals for All Wisconsin movement has been working to elevate these kinds of questions, prioritize these things in the state budget. There is money for school meals for all in the proposed budget this year in Wisconsin. And parents who are hearing this, or just people that are hearing this, can go to Healthy School Meals for All Wisconsin, Healthy School Meals for All WI.org. to learn more about that. And to, there's a really great explanation of how this is interconnected. So the kids win, the farmers win, and community win.
There, can you hear Kristen? Can you hear Christina Shelton, the state representative? I mean, she might be trying to crawl through the screen at this moment just to thank you for bringing that up, because that that has been a thing for her. Give me the web address again. I want to be able to put that up on
screen. Sure, please do. It is Healthy School Meals for All, WI.org.
This has been a giant initiative for Representative Shelton. And by no coincidence, she, of course, is our Green Bay area rep. So see how this is all happening?
Well, can I share something super exciting?
Yeah.
Through Wello, through Farm to School, we've been able to create a 400% increase in the amount of local produce that's being purchased by our nine Brown County school districts. As I said, we're leaders in this field, and Representative Shelton actually came out to meet with the farming hub that does the bulk of the production for the farm to school in Brown County. And that's where this bill started. Those conversations started right here at Ledgeview Gardens in Brown County. So I super feel like we're in at the ground floor with this one, and we want to get it over the line.
That is really exciting and really inspiring to see that there's a problem. There's something great happening, and there are opportunities to make it better, to make it bigger. 400% increase.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes, that's insane. So this is not just a Wisconsin thing, though. I mean, you've done all of this work in Brown County, all of this work in Wisconsin. But Beth, you were recently appointed to serve on the National Farm to School Network Advisory Board.
Yes.
Can you tell us, tell us about it and who they are and what do they do?
Sure. I'm really exciting again, because you know, we're doing such good work. We want to elevate it to the national level. We want to get into those conversations. So the National School, National Farm to School, I'm so nervous when I talk on these things. So y'all forgive me.
For us, there is nothing that should make anybody nervous about. Again, you've met her. You've met Kristen,
no,
right?
So,
all right. So as you were saying,
back to the food joy.
MFSA is a information advocacy and networking hub at a national level for communities like ours that are really working to connect local agriculture to schools and that and all the things that that entails. So it's really exciting to be able to plug into those national advocacy, take some of the things we just talked about and talk about them at a, you know, across the country, and then meet other people. It's a real opportunity for us to plug into what other states are doing, what other groups are doing. So it actually is a real feather in our cap. I'm on the advisory council, but it's really Brown County and our Farm to School Task Force. They're the ones that are on there. I'm just the mouthpiece for all my awesome partners at the nine school districts here in Brown County.
Boy, that sound like somebody I know. I'm just the mouthpiece for all my awesome partners. No wonder you two found each other.
Well, and you're such a great mouthpiece, because think about Wisconsin, think about all the food we grow here and all of the opportunity that we have to lead in this area. So Beth, to have you at the helm, I think is just, it's so logical and it's just so important.
Well, this would be a good time to make any kind of a recruiting pitch. I don't know if you're looking, you know, again, for volunteers, or if you're looking for advocates or any other kind of, you know, call to action that people should take away from this. What do you want people to know or do?
So number one, honestly, I'm gonna plug those Healthy School Meals for All one more time. I think if you go to that website, if you read the information, you're gonna get a lot of the understanding that we don't have time to go into now, why this is such an important, you know, for the kids, for the farms, for the community, why this is an imperative right now for our state. And then, you know, check out Wello. We do all sorts. If you like what you hear, if you're interested in how you can be part of community-led change for well-being, check out wello.org. And we have lots of ways to get involved there.
Oh yeah. Farm to School is tip of the iceberg with Wello.
I mean,
Wello, it's like Wello has its tentacles into all of the community building and health-related stuff. It's a wonderful organization.
Well, that's awesome, Beth. Thank you so much. We appreciate the update. And I don't doubt we'll be getting more Wello updates from you as we move along here.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Kristen, again, congratulations on your role out there in Minnesota this week on that bill signing. I mean, if whether it's your work in rural areas for healthcare or political advocacy or now something like this hometown health, you know, you need a break.
This is my hobby. But you know, Pat, it's all connected. Good food, access to healthcare, everything that I'm doing, everything that Beth is doing, it just emphasizes the connection.
Very true. All right. Thank you guys. Have a great weekend. Mark Jacob joins us next on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Well, Aaron sends me a note here that we do have a winner of tonight's Brewers tickets. So, Jeff, congratulations on knowing that among these four landmark Milwaukee Brewers, Miller, Schlitz, Pabst, and Blatz, that it was Pabst in 1844. That was first, so you've got yourself tickets for tonight's Brewer game. Hope that you get out there and enjoy it. Mark Jacob joins us now, and this is our chance where we can only do this once a week. If we could do it more often, we would do it more often in your home as you're looking at various TV reports or websites to tell you, oh my God, don't take that at face value, the stuff that they're writing. And I'm going to start with this. Politico: White House regroups after McCarthy's debt ceiling success. And if Mark or I were sitting on the couch with you, you'd see us shouting at the TV or the computer screen, are you kidding me? Because that's not what it was at all. Good morning, Mark.
No, I mean, and it's also, it's too early to declare anything a success or a failure. I mean, it's a process right now. But it's also, the thing about it is that the Politico, their job, their self-assigned job is to cover politics like it's sports, you know? And so it's, that was a good move. That was a good move. I commented that if Politico had been around in 1933, it would have said that the Reichstag fire was a savvy move by politicians in Germany. I mean, it's just not covering anything from a standpoint of whether it's good for democracy or it's good for the political process. It's all just, it's all just who's up, who's down, who hit a homer or who struck out. And so it doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do the people. I mean, it might do the political industry in Washington, D.C. some good, but it doesn't do regular citizens who want to live in a free country any good.
And it doesn't enable you. I mean, you say that they're, just calling the plays, like play by play. Well, in my mind, they're not doing it accurately enough. And in your Twitter feed, you retweet something from Fix the Media Now, and it takes a Washington Post headline and annotates it, basically draws a red pen through it. So in the first part of the headline, it says, U.S. drifts toward cliff as debt ceiling bill passes House. And they scratch out U.S. drifts toward cliff, and more accurately put, Republicans push U.S. toward cliff as debt ceiling bill passes the House. The subhead says, GOP cuts target president's priorities. No, it correctly notes GOP cuts target Americans' priorities, because again, the president, what he's proposing are things that have bipartisan support. It just seems so odd that they can't be even, they strive for accuracy, they say. Why wouldn't you be more accurate?
Because they feel like their best, the best posture for them, for their future, is to act like, like it's just the Republicans and Democrats are just, two sides of the same coin. And that it's, that it doesn't matter. We're just going to, we just want to be fair and all that. But it can't be fair when one side is lying and causing big trouble for this country and the other side is actually trying to run a country. And the thing about the debt ceiling thing that drives me nuts is that this is money that we've already agreed to spend. This is not like us discussing the budget process. This is not us discussing what we're going to spend next year or the year after. This is the Republicans deciding, no, we're not. We're going to ignore our debts. We're not going to pay our debts. We've already agreed to spend the money. We're spending the money right now, but we're not going to pay for it. And that's what you know, we're not a deadbeat nation. And the reason that the debt ceiling is an important thing is because if we do become a debt, you know, a deadbeat nation, then nobody will trust us anymore. You know, right now you go overseas and people are talking about dollars. Well, they won't be talking about dollars anymore if we don't, you know, straighten up our act. And so viewing it that way gets you a lot of different headlines than if you view it as just a, well, all the sides are equal. Everyone's got a valid, you know, viewpoint, and it doesn't really matter. It's just politics, which is, you know, it's not just politics, Pat. It's our government, and it's our future. It's our children's future and our grandchildren's future. It's not just politics.
And yet you do it all a disservice if you're a newsroom that engages in both sidesism to a fault, or as one person put it that you retweeted, performative objectivity. And again, they in this case, again, it's a Washington Post headline that says, a Nebraska state lawmaker is being formally investigated over an alleged conflict of interest for opposing a bill that would restrict gender-affirming care for minors because she has a 12-year-old son who is transgender. The framing of that headline, you know, could lead one to think, oh, there might be a conflict of interest right there, when the real story is, you know, this political effort to intimidate a legislator. And by the way, the bipartisan outrage that somebody would basically abuse the ethics process right for something like this. And you don't frame it as both sides.
Right. But the headline also is framed as if there's a legitimate conflict of interest issue here. Well, if there's a conflict, because the legislator has a kid who's affected by this. Well, let's get real here. If that were the case, then no person with a kid could ever vote on any school issues. You wouldn't have, I mean, you wouldn't, no legislator, you can't vote on this education bill because you have children in school. I mean, it's an absurd notion. Yet the Washington Post took it as, you know, just as a legitimate stand opinion that somebody had, you know, that, so they just were playing it straight down the line, even though it was just a ridiculous thing. And the thing about it, Pat, is what journalists need to do, what the journalist's job is to cut through the crap and tell people what's actually happening. That's the job. I mean, if you're just going to repeat the same old BS that everyone says, nobody needs journalists for that. You can just, you know, look on your social media and you'll get true stuff and BS, and it's just your job to figure out. The actual service that journalists provide is cutting through the crap and telling people what's actually happening.
And calling it, you know, what it is. And, you know, you have quite accurately described what's happening when people engage in anti-democratic with a small d behavior. For example, the Montana House of Representatives voting to ban the first trans woman lawmaker from the floor of the legislature.
Right.
For having the audacity to speak out against anti-trans legislation. And what really bugged me before that is, for days before banning her from the floor, whenever she would want to speak on an issue, they wouldn't recognize her. And right. I don't use the word lightly, but I don't want the word fascist to be overused. But when you are a democratically elected body and you refuse to recognize one of your own to speak on a matter, that's not democratic with a small d.
No, and you're seeing that this has become a trend in Republican-dominated legislatures. You know, obviously you saw it in Tennessee with the Tennessee Three, and they seem to think that that's a great tactic is to shut up other legislators who they don't agree with, and to just abuse their power. I mean, the real problem is that fascists, when they have power, they have to abuse their power in order to show their power. And so you're getting these horrible abuses of power. And the thing about it is, the beauty of the democratic system, small d democratic, because we know, you know, that's, if that's controversial, then that blows my mind to believe in democracy. But the beauty of our system is that everyone gets a say, people can make arguments, people get to vote, they get to decide who represents them, and they sort it all out, and they vote on it, and they pass laws. That's you know, that's the beauty of the system. But when you start undermining the system by, you know, kicking people out of the legislature that you don't like, or, you know, or silencing people, you know, she's in Montana, she's working from a hallway now. She's like sitting on a bench in a hallway because they've kicked her out of the actual legislature. No, she can actually vote. She just can't speak.
Yeah, as to vote remotely, it's just amazing. Now, as we mentioned quite frequently, Up North News is a separate entity from the Civic Media radio stations, and our parent company is Courier Newsroom, and they too have a new site, couriernewsroom.com, and you have a new column on there that I'll just put the ball on the tee for you because of this week's announcement by the president. The headline simply says, "Who gives a damn about Biden's approval rating?"
Yeah. Why is that? And you know, you hear about this talk all the time. I mean, I'm a freelance writer since I've, you know, left the Chicago Tribune, and I, you know, I have the MSNBC or some radio station up, you know, all the time, and I'm, you know, typing and reading and stuff. And I keep on hearing the phrase approval rating. Well, Biden's approval rating. Well, what about Biden's approval rating? Well, aren't they worried about Biden's approval rating? And it's like, it's this constant drumbeat. And I'm thinking, you know, why are you talking about it all the time? His approval rating, according to Gallup, and for my essay, I used all Gallup numbers, and his approval rating is 40% today. That doesn't sound that great. It's certainly, you know, less than half. But it's, you know, it's been pretty consistently that way. And when you look at it, my point was to say that a candidate for president is not running against nobody. It's not running against some fictional perfect candidate. You're running against somebody. And if that person doesn't have a very good approval rating either, then your approval rating is less significant. Yeah. Also, you know, I mean, you look at in 2016, nobody liked either candidate, or very few people liked either candidate. They both had terrible approval ratings. They had high disapproval ratings, but somebody got elected. And so isn't that what we should be focusing on? And when you look at approval ratings historically, Biden's approval rating, as I said, was 40%. It's 40% now. And every of the last 10 presidents has had approval rating lower than that at some point in their tenure. So it fluctuates a lot. It goes up, it goes down. Right. I believe George Bush, after the Iraq war, the Gulf War, he had a super high approval rating, and then it just plummeted. I mean, people go down. Clinton's approval rating, by the way, his average was 55%. Can you imagine? He would never come close. If he did the exact same things, was president now, he would never come close to that number because of the negativity.
And the point that I made after the midterms, when it was clear that Republicans were going to take over the House of Representatives, is that approval ratings mean even less because you now know there's going to be legislative gridlock. So Biden got through more things in his first 2 years than either any president ever, or at least in a recent memory. He has massive legislative achievement to talk about for the next 2 years. And people are going to say, well, we don't approve of how he and Congress can't work together. They were never going to work together.
Right.
You know, House Republicans were going to make sure of that, you know, all the way down the line. So again, at couriernewsroom.com is where you'll find that. And you know, Mark Jacob has his Twitter feed as well, where again, he's looking at current events in the media, and that's where we'll conclude with Tucker Carlson, RIP, or, you know, or don't go away angry, just go away. Or, I mean, does he join the list of Bill O'Reilly and the others who they think they're going to be bigger after Fox, but they just aren't?
Well, there is that history, you know, of Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck, who, you know, were huge and then they weren't anymore. There's a new report that Newsmax is desperately trying to get Tucker Carlson to come over to their channel, and that they have even offered him the ability to program the entire TV station, the entire channel. And which means he could decide, you know, well, this person's going to be on at 6 a.m., this person's not, and which is crazy. I mean, that you would have let a host like decide your entire programming schedule. But maybe they're just, you know, it's a play because they're just so desperate to get him. You know, I don't know what to say about Tucker Carlson. I think he will kind of fade a little bit. But I also have a little theory of my own that he may run for president, because he's the most Trumpian candidate person out there who could succeed Trump, because he doesn't have any values. I mean, he doesn't really believe in anything except like demagoguery. But he also empowers sexists and racists. He tells them it's okay to be sexist and racist. He's glib. He doesn't ever apologize for anything. He's obnoxious. He has this kind of entertainment, obnoxious entertainment quality that Trump has. And so I think it is indeed possible he could run for president someday.
He could. And then that would just continue, you know, in the vein of, again, RIP Jerry Springer, you know, a certain subset of the electorate that just wants to be angry at things. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher joins us, and we'll talk about sports collapses and whether basically the question is Milwaukee Bucks, big collapse or biggest collapse. We'll be back. Dan Schumacher joins us now. What are we listening to today?
I didn't even hear that part. For some reason, the volume of mine didn't work.
Oh, that's well. Aaron can play this jockey then. Aaron, what you play for us?
This is Box of Rain.
Box of Rain by Phil Lush.
There we go. All right.
One of the originals from their first big album, which was called American Beauty.
All right.
That was the top song.
There's your musical moment of zen.
There you go.
Dan, I know it's not like you watch the Milwaukee Bucks with any regularity, but you know we all knew how good the team was this year, and yep. Those last two games that ended their season against Miami both featured a stunning fourth quarter collapse. And I teased you that we were going to talk about sports collapses, and of course I had to poke the bear and mention the 2003 Cubs and the Bartman game. Which where are you on that school of thought that people say, look, the Bartman, that's just part of a larger thing, that the Cubs were collapsing anyway, or are you of the that moment ruined everything?
No, I'm with you. They were collapsing anyways. They were Bartman became the excuse.
Yeah.
Just like the Billy Goat, just like the Black Cat, just like whatever, you know, I mean, all those superstitions, and they got to look for – Cub fans had to look for something to point to.
Yep. Two of my favorites involve the Red Sox and the Yankees. First was that 1978 playoff game where Boston fell short. But then Boston got its revenge in 2004 when they were down 3-1 in the ALCS and then came back and won those games. I thought that was an amazing collapse by the Yankees. It's before my time, but the Philadelphia Athletics, I think it was in 1964. Was it? Yeah, not the Phillies. They had quite the meltdown at the end of the season. And let's not forget the Green Bay Packers in that 2014 NFC Championship game, which would have been January 18th, 2015. Oh my God, that was brutal.
Was that versus San Francisco?
No, that was Seattle.
Seattle.
That's Seattle. And we were down in Grand Cayman. We were at a beach bar. We were all full of ourselves. We were going to go to the Super Bowl. And there were some Seahawks fans that were down there as well. And, you know, they were so miserable for the first, you know, three quarters or so. Right. And then the tide turned. And I guess I enjoyed their joy almost as much as I hated the collapse, you know?
Well, you know what? The collapse is one thing for the Bucks, but like I was saying to you off air there.
Yeah, Giannis had some inspirational words. Yeah.
He did. He compared, you know, how many times did Michael Jordan get to the championship, or out of how many seasons he played, he was looking things in totality like, hey, I still got about another 10 seasons left in me. We're going to get back here. You know, everybody's got to relax. And, you know, what did Aaron Rodgers do? Just relax.
Yeah, R-E-L-A-X. Well, he made the point that the question was asked, is this a failure? Did you fail? Right. And I loved his framing of just because you don't get all the way to something, like you said, in those seasons where Jordan didn't get to the championships, does that make the season a failure? And he said, no, it's a part of a process.
That's right. That's exactly right on you. I thought it was a great message. His great response to the media when they were challenging him about the collapse or choking or whatever you want to call it. I thought he had a great response. I think it's something everybody should show their kids to, how he responded to adversity. He was humble and he was direct and he was right on. So
Well, especially if you're willing to acknowledge, you don't have to acknowledge a failure if it's not a failure, but you have to acknowledge your shortcomings, you know, whether it was going, I think, 10 for 23 on free throws in his case, or, you know, just nobody being able to stop Jimmy Butler. There's just right. Sometimes there's somebody on that other team that just steps up. They have your number and right. They had no answer for him. Yeah. I mentioned that the Packers took a pass rusher in the first round of the draft.
Lucas Van Ness from the University of Iowa.
Yeah, now that says something that the Packers know that their pass rush needs a little help. So hopefully you can do that.
Did you watch the NFL draft? I got home late last night, got a chance to watch like the second half of the first round. It went on for hours to like 11 o'clock last night.
It's just it's so Hollywood now. I mean, I watched through the second pick. So I watched like the 15 minutes prior, and then the opening is like a production number now. Yeah. They had Heidi Gardner from Saturday Night Live and Eric Stonestreet from Modern Family, who both, I guess, have some Kansas City ties because the draft was in Kansas City. Sure. And, you know, they make them walk all the way from, I think it's a train station or something, to come out to the outdoor stage. And so this long, long walk, we were joking that one of these NFL picks is going to tear an ACL on right. that long walk to get to the stage. You know, right.
I enjoyed such a production. Our friends to the west of us, the Vikings. Boy, did you see the outfit the guy was wearing that they picked, the wide receiver from USC? He looked like a pink lollipop. It was just glitter and pink suit with white shoes, glasses.
When are you ever going to see him in anything but a football uniform, though? Yeah. So, you know, if that's your one chance to show your style, I mean, imagine what would you wear right now if you got drafted for something and you were on national TV? Yeah. Would you be in a suit and tie?
Of course, a nice suit and tie, like a nice dark suit. But this looked like a costume.
Uh-huh.
They all were in costumes last night. It was like, who could one up each other with either gold or earrings or necklaces? And it was just, it was such a made for TV type deal.
Oh, without a doubt.
What it used to be.
Without a doubt. You are at the near the end of the spring sports season in the WIAC. And so between baseball, softball, track, golf, tennis, I mean, there is no way to summarize everything that's going on except to say, if you're at one of those WIAC schools, you're probably busy this weekend.
Yeah, we are trying to cram as many rescheduled games, both softball, baseball, track, you know, lacrosse, all of it into the next 2 weeks before postseason. So, you know, we're trying to get two doubleheaders in tomorrow and Sunday, but it looks like it's going to rain all through the weekend. Today we have a track meet. I mean, everybody's struggling. It was weird. Like, as we thought we were coming out of the winter, we get hit with snow. Then a week later, the southern part of the state got hit with snow. So everything's been rescheduled. I don't think we'll get the full schedule in because of this weather, which would be the first time since the winter of 2013. Hmm. 2013, it was just brutal. In fact, baseball and softball here did not even have a home game.
And this is where I feel bad about the athletes who they're still taking classes. And you're coming up on finals week. And, you know, say what you will about programs where, you know, it's all about basket weaving or whatever the old joke is. There's a lot of these kids are just busting their tails, you know, to keep that GPA up.
And they're constantly in limbo. Mm-hmm. So what they usually do at the beginning of the semester, every team and a student athlete comes to their professor and gives them a sheet of paper, says, these are the days of class I'm going to miss for game travel.
Yeah.
You can't miss class for practice. That's inexcusable. Mm-hmm. But for games. So constantly the student athlete is getting updated based on, well, it's been rescheduled from Sunday to Tuesday now.
Yeah. You know, I can't even fathom what that all is, but I know it's keeping you busy. You keep up to date with it, and we'll talk again next Friday.
Yeah, that sounds good, Pat.
All right. Thanks so much. Everybody have a great weekend up there. You can follow me at Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook. Earl Ingram is next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba, every place else. We'll see you Monday.